welcome to Holden Village. In the Creekside Room, today's speaker is Kathy Sorrells, and she will be speaking on creation in her series Creativity and Spirituality. So let's listen in on Kathy.
Today we're going to be talking about creation. I do really think assessment is really a wonderful thing. The great thing about the raccoon finding is it's so immediate. You make this pot, and we did two or three rounds, so I let this one go through, and I got to look at it and say, oh, I really like this, or I don't really like that. And so the next pot, I got to vary it or change it or whatever. And often our assessment and our create, the whole process is not that quick, so you don't get the feedback quite as quickly. Hello!
Maybe it's lots of kids.
That's a tough one. So.
Hi.
You're just having a bit of a informal chat about the whole creative process.
Cool.
Yeah. I know you're... We say hi all the time, and I know you're in my first classes, and I can't remember your name.
Joanna.
And Barb. And
Jane.
Mal.
Hi.
M-A-L.
Barb,
Mal.
Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you, what, actually, I just got everybody's name, but one of the things, we were just talking about the creative process. You've been at one of the classes, so you've got a sense of what we're doing here. We're in the creation phase, and we're going to do some fun things in a little bit. What I wanted us to think about first, though, is Pascal apparently wrote a word on a piece of paper, and he put that word inside of his clothes, and he wore it from about the time that he was 35 until he died. I'm assuming he wrote it on a different piece of paper every once in a while. But the word that he wrote was a word that reminded him of what inspires him and what he's passionate about. And I'll tell you afterwards what the word was. I don't let you know. But I would like you all to think about a word. Think about two things. A person in your life that you've known that inspires you, that moves you towards being creative, and then a word that touches your passion, that inspires you, that moves you towards manifesting your creation, whether that be in your spiritual life, as a mother, in your occupation, in your decisions. And I'm going to get some scratch paper, and you guys can, you don't have to pin it on yourself, but you can put it anywhere you want. And maybe wear it today and then sort of get a sense of what that feels like. I have some paper here.
A word.
A word on one side and a person on the other side.
Oh, a word on a person.
Yeah. You all can just rip that up.
Everyone
from grade.
Perfect.
A person, say, give us the directions again.
Yeah, on one side, a person who has inspired you, has moved you, has been, in some ways, you know, last night we had this very large discussion that I facilitated on inclusive language, and so I'm becoming very, even more conscious of how I talk about God, which I have here, too. But one of the ways that I think about God is that God calls us forth. To come forth. And I feel that God works through people in our lives. So thinking of a person who has called you forth to be who you are, to be the creation that you are. And if you put that on one side, that person's name, and then on the other side, a word that, if you want to use this marker, you can see this bigger one. A word
that really cool.
If you really want, you want to do it in pencil, I know, so you can erase it. A word that also...
I might change your mind.
Relating to that person?
No, the word doesn't relate to the person. A word that, as Pascal, that inspired him, that was, that really was what his passion was, what fed him.
Change.
Yeah, which I think is very interesting, because I thought of that too.
Yeah, I mean, to me the word might change. I don't know what word for now. But.
I think that's perfectly okay, you know, and I think that's... would possibly, there would be people today who it wouldn't change for, but I think the word would change for me, too.
Thank you.
I recorded, I took a sheet of paper about a month ago, 2 months ago, and in a spiral, I was just overcome by all the people who supported me this last year. I put them all around in a circle, and it was just, it kind of loosely came to friends, neighbors, others. I have that thing in my desk, and I look at it sometimes, and you know, all directions. That's not a word, but again, that's a lot of people who got part in my creative process. You're precious.
Well, if any of you would like to share the word or something about the person, that would be great.
My person is Donna, and this is a gal who I've only known for a few months, but she's been a big inspiration to me. Number one, she's very creative. She quilts and just does beautifully. She's very socially aware, and I mean, she'd fit in here in this community just easily. She's hitchhiked around the world, lived in a commune. You know, she's been an activist for many years and been aware, and these are a lot of things that I'm just kind of becoming more aware of in my own life. And personally, she had a son who died of cancer 5 years ago, and when he was 4 years old, and she's become quite a death and dying education activist as well. And she's been a tremendous help to my family and modeling how their family has healed and gone on. So to me, she's a real model. And she might not be forever, and I haven't known her forever, and so I kind of hesitated to put her down, but as soon as she said that, I thought, oh, Donna. So that's a person who embodies the creative process for me. And then the word, I put down truth. I was thinking authenticity and integrity, reality. And then I came up with truth, because I think, to me, that's... not truth in, you know, like a doctrinal way, but when you're tapped into truth of yourself, of the moment, then a lot of the distractions that impede creativity are, they just aren't. That's my, I think I'd gladly wear this for a while.
Yeah.
This is pretty cool.
Wear it and see how it feels.
Oh, I will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See if new things come. I mean, I think anytime we draw our attention to something in particular, meaning grows around it. So.
Wonderful.
Anybody else want to?
Sure. My person is Jane. And for lots of reasons. She's encouraged me to take risks at burden to herself. Like at age 30, quitting my job and going back to school with 3 kids. But she calls me to task when I get out of hand. And that's helpful too. So I feel accountable. And my word is worship. Even though I'm a technical person by training, my passion really is worship. And so... I hadn't thought about it in that way before, but that's where I am now. Creative worship is just, those are my mountaintop experiences here, literally, and in places like synod assemblies, or we went to an ordination 3 weeks ago. I mean, those are just moments of great pleasure and spiritual awareness. So worship is my word.
Okay. Anyway. Well, do you know what worship means? I mean that in the most literal etymology.
Well,
the etymology of it.
Worship. God is worthy of our praise is the etymology of the word. But we just went through a long study, 6 months. Our congregation has been divided, unfortunately, because a large segment wanted and wants, and we just initiated this past week while we're gone, a contemporary form of worship. Whereas our pastor and our music director were literally almost, I will quit first a year ago, and it's evolved. So we did a lot of very intentional study on the, you know, how has worship evolved in the Christian church. Mm-hmm. And it really evolved out of the synagogue worship of the Jewish community, where you sang psalms, praises, prayed for the community, and listened to the story, the word repeated. And then Christians augmented that by adding the sacrament of the altar, Lord's Supper. Mm-hmm. And so that is the that's where it stems from.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, mm-hmm.
You're probably aware of that there's a major discussion going on here about worship and the use of language.
Well, yeah, I became aware of that yesterday.
Yeah. Well, it's broader than simply worship, not simply, because that's a very big thing, but I think worship is such a central part of Holden and how we are going to worship together when we have differences of what it means to worship. I think that your knowledge, both of you, whatever, could be real helpful to people here. Mm-hmm. There's probably going to be another dialogue next week.
It's maybe the night after we leave.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, anyway, maybe there's another way for your...
It is such an emotional, passionate struggle, and I empathize with the people who had the courage to speak last night, because it is. Whether you are outwardly emotional or not, those who are very stoic when they sit here and talk are torn up inside,
yeah,
too. It,
yeah.
It is.
Worship is intimate. My thought when I think of worship is, I mean, this is knowledge, but somebody said once that the root of the word meant something like kiss toward. You know, the worship is actually, you know, kiss the sun lest he flee from you, or something like that. Some verse that actually, that's the same sort of word as worship. And also the verse about worshiping in spirit and reality, you know, that I don't think of worship as a service or as a form, but as a that facilitates that flow.
This has been an interest for a long time. One of the people, a book that I found helpful is written by an evangelical by the name of Robert Weber, who's at Wheaton College, called Worship is a Verb, and that title captures a lot. Because you don't go to be worshipped, you go to worship. And so I think it's a line from his book. It says, when you walk out, you don't ask, what did that do for me, or how do I feel? You ask, how did I do? Did I worship? And that's what we're there for.
Right.
And for some people, to use the word Father is almost necessary to have raised theirs, and for others, because of their journey they've gone through, that would just shut it off. Mm-hmm. And so how are you able to worship together is a real dilemma.
Yep.
I don't know if
that's
there's an
where
answer.
We are. Yeah. I didn't need to, because certainly the conversation was going in all the ways to discover and explore what we wanted, but a question I had last night, if I had been one to enter the circle, would be, can God be a verb?
Well, there's
and I know that well, it was a little bit too radical.
I've heard a sermon. When God says, I am who I am,
am
is a verb, so he says God is the great verb.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
It's not an action verb, it is being.
Being. Yeah, which is very close to the areas of religious theology that I studied, which are Buddhism and Taoism. That's
and
much more about
Dao.
Dao.
Well, thank you. Worship is a wonderful thing to...
It's a passion.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. My passion is being.
That's your word.
Yeah, but for now, anyway, that's the way.
That's wonderful. Is that the word you put down?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love it.
I mean, you know, through my life. The person that I put down for now was Mary Milady, who's my spiritual director, who's a Roman Catholic sister, and who's... I went through a program through Loyola, and she's one on the staff of the program, and then she was my spiritual director during that time, and just has continued. And she has encouraged me to be, you know, and that's part of the thrust of the program, and that's my, you know, that's what I hope I can do, and I don't want to use
duty.
Yeah, and help others in the work that I do to be themselves, you know. And I think that going through that program especially helped me to be more of Jane, even in my relationship with Mel, so that my relationship, I have been able to be more of Jane with Mel, which has allowed me to grow in knowing that he loves me, my being, no matter what that is, because I was raised with a lot of shoulds and rules and you know, you can be this way but not this way, and you know, and I came into the marriage that way, and I tried to be what I thought I was supposed to be, you know. So yeah, being is just, you know, for now, and I haven't really thought of that, but that's sort of what I've been trying to live in me, you know, truly, and then however God calls that forth in the world, moment by moment.
Thanks.
My two words. The word that moves me towards my passion. I get hung up on this one because I always think my passion ought to amount to my preconceived notion. I'll have to do a little chair work on my passion.
Yeah, right. Transformation
about. My preconceived notion is that it ought to amount to something. it doesn't always look like that. Just it's more verbs than it is a noun. But the word that moves me in that direction is genuineness. Mm-hmm. And a person that has called me to be who I am is a woman that I met serendipitously after the birth of my second child in the Hardee's. Best food restaurant in my town. And here I was feeling kind of like, I don't know how people have children, let alone live with their children and parent their children.
Yes.
And it was a 3-year-old and a 3-month-old at the time. And this woman just came in and just had a presence about her, and then gave me the deposit slip from her checkbook with her phone number and address on it. And we sprung up a friendship. She recently moved. And but she's a person who, in her own authenticity and her own struggles with being a parent, she had 2 children that were slightly older than my own, and just living her life from that space, and always a person that was expanding possibilities. She lived at the end of a cul-de-sac, so when we would come over to her house, the whole neighborhood was in her backyard, and I was like, I couldn't conceive of taking care of 2 children, let alone supervising 10 children, and it would, you know, go from one thing to the next. So it's a person who encourages me to be home.
Thanks. You don't feel you need to share either.
I'll share my word, but I won't share my person.
Yes.
Discovering, I think, is where I'm at in my life right now. Just discovering who I am spiritually, work-wise, because I want to, as I mentioned before, go to school. I like that. So just. And maybe about a word that'll just kind of help to keep me moving towards that, to just discover, you know, what God's will in that life should be. And just keep moving towards that. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at.
Well, I just put the name of the person of a person because I think about this so much, and I hear other people's words that sometimes I have to spend more time to really get centered and find out what my word is. So, but my grandmother Rosa, who I never knew, she died in giving birth to my dad, and was actually sort of forgotten by the family and unknown. My grandfather remarried, and 6 years after she was born, and or after my dad was born, and so. they didn't want any of the kids to really know that she wasn't our real grandmother. And this is, I'm Southern, which is a whole other layer of, as if there is something wrong with dying in childbirth, but there was some sense of shame about that and that you wouldn't want to talk about it and things. Anyway, I had a dream about 5 years ago, and it was a grandmother figure in the dream. And without going through all the details, she invited me to take something down out of the ceiling, and it was a shoebox. And so I took it down and I started to open it, and then I woke up. And so I had asked, I live in Seattle, my family, my parents live in Georgia, but my twin sister lives in Atlanta. So I called her and I said, Christy, next time you're over in Athens, you know, talk to mom and dad, find out, see if you can find out anything more about Rosa. And all we knew about her at that point was her name. And this is only 5 years ago, so we had lived a fair number of years here. And so my sister went home and asked my dad about it, and he was sitting there, and he said, you know, there might be a shoebox of stuff, a box of stuff up in the attic. And so they went up in the attic, and sure enough, there was a box of pictures and a few things that had been written by my step-grandmother, the woman who we thought was our grandmother.
Wow.
About her. And so I went on this sort of quest to find out more about her through the paper. She died in, I think it was, well, when my dad was born, 1912. So, went back through the newspapers. And in some ways, she has become, for me, a linkage to the creative process. She died giving birth, being creative. And I think there have been a lot of ways in my family, as well as in the world, that we have died in our creation. And I think, that I have, over the last 5 years, have had sort of a rebirth as far as my creativity, and so she really represents that. And this person is very close to my heart, having not known her. So that's the person I put on there. And the suspense here, Pascal's word was, and I don't know, I can't pronounce the French for it, but it was fire. Fier, I guess, is the French word, but fire is what inspired him throughout his life.
Wow.
What I wanted to do next is read to you the creation story. And the creation story, the Judeo-Christian creation story, there are many. And it's from, I'm reading from this book. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a wonderful compilation of creation stories, myths from around the world. But what I wanted to do is read it, and actually, I would love it if somebody else would like to read it.
Yeah.
If any of you would volunteer to do that, that would be great. What I'm thinking as we read it, there's a wonderful picture in here that illustrates, but is to think about what are we learning from this, what have we always learned from this, what new can we learn from this about the creative process. From the story that really is the story of the creation of our lives. It's the story of the creation of our religion. It's the story of the creation of the world for us. So if we read it almost as if we are hearing it for the first time, and as a story that can teach us about ourselves as creations and the creative process.
In the beginning, Elohim. In the beginning, Elohim, God, created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form. There was nothing, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning one day. And God said, let there be a vault in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. And God made the vault and separated the waters which were under the vault from the waters which were above the vault. And it was so. And God called the vault heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning. Second day. And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let the earth put forth plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind upon the earth. And it was so. The earth brought forth plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit in which is their seed. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning. It was the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the vaults of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs to mark seasons and days and years, and have them shine from the vault of the heavens to give light on the earth. And it was so. And God set two great lights in the vault of the heavens to separate the light from the darkness. The greater light would rule over the day, and the lesser light would rule over the night. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the vault of the heavens. And God also created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. And there was evening, and there was morning. It was a fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the cattle according to theirs, and everything that creeps upon the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So God created man in his own image, after our likeness. And he let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have power over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed which is upon the face of all, and every tree with seed in its fruit, you shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work which he had done, and he rested. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on that day God rested from all his work which he had done in creation.
Thank you for reading it.
Did you see the literature?
Any thoughts or comments that came up? Come on here, I think it's something new. I love it.
I just want declaration happen before manifestation. That made me think of how you declare, the power, the ability to declare something into existence, yet you don't even know the path or the process of how it's going to happen, or what you're going to do, or how you're going to be. to...
A really simple example of that is when I came here, I said, I'd really like to do a rapid firing because I've never done one. And I said to Meta, who was here at the time, who was in the potter during the winter, I said, Meta, have you ever done a raku firing? And she said, no, I've never done one, but I think when Gary comes, maybe we can do a raku firing. And so we got, you know, we just talked about it off and on. Didn't talk about it a lot. But then when Gary came, I said, Gary, have you ever done a raku firing? He said, yeah. I don't know if you know Gary, but it's sort of like, he said, yeah, let me go look. And he said, sure, that's a good idea. And he got the kiln out, you know, and the whole thing happened. But it was really because we said, mm-hmm. I want to do this. So that's a very, in some ways, concrete example.
Yeah. And I just think of all the big things that happen because somebody declared them into existence.
Right. Well, and then everybody gets included, you know, and more people came down. And there were, you know, it became an event last night, actually. And lots of people have pots now.
Yeah.
That, that's, you know, and Anthony said he'd never done anything creative in his life. Anthony and I need to talk. But... but he was so very grateful for that experience of decorating one of those pots and having it go through the firing, you know, because he now has a different image of himself, you know, which is pretty neat. So that was a good way of putting it, too, declaration before manifestation.
See, and I'm kind of exactly the opposite. I like the fact that God just was, mostly because my Christian history, I mean, we talk about speaking things into being as if we can have this magic formula make God's truth work for us, and I'm so sick of that. So instead, I like that God just is, and out comes the being. But actually, I probably would like that story better if it was just in the beginning, God. I like that part, in the beginning, God. And well,
what does it say at the very beginning? I think it's really...
In the beginning, God.
Yeah, in the beginning, God. Or the Hebrew name, Elohim. Yeah. Elohim for God.
I'm erasing a lot of what I know. I mean, I've heard, you know, I've heard expounding about, you know, we're in God's image. And I've heard, you know, I've heard so much stuff. And I want the truth of it. I don't want the stuff of it. Mm-hmm. That's me.
We live across the road from Fermilab, which is the National Accelerator Laboratory, where they're trying to discover the origins of the universe.
Right. Uh-huh.
And what is, to me, neat is hardly an adequate word, but it is, that this is poetic language that is consistent with all they have been able to discover.
Yeah.
And
that's
it point. Was from an instant.
Yeah.
It was created.
Yeah.
Well, and it's no different. You know, one of the things that I do in another class that I work on myth and ritual, and in a more expanded version, is talk about chaos theory as the current myth. And just as that was the myth, it was the way that we, and so that we can come back and embrace that as a truly valuable, poetic, meaningful piece, just as we do, some people do, around chaos theory. You know, and that there's not really a conflict between those things, which would be a whole other discussion, but I think that's wonderful for you to say that the people that are, you know, like you said, across the street from you, that's what they're, it's another way, it's a language that's slightly different, but they're basically saying the same thing.
And some of them who work on it, you know, say almost the same thing, but can't bring themselves to say that God was that force that did it,
but
they can't deny what they are seeing, and so the data they have now is very consistent with a In an instant, God created, mm-hmm. as with the word.
A couple of thoughts that came to mind for me. Creation is abundant, as opposed to limiting, and a process that entails balance.
Yeah, definitely. There's a rhythm there. I enjoyed hearing you read it, because there's definitely a very nice rhythm.
Yeah.
The other thing is, he didn't ever say, this is bad.
I have a...
That's what I...
It's very affirming. I've created this. This is good.
That's I like it. Yeah, and I looked at assessment. Is that what assessment is? Over and over again, God assesses what he's done.
This is never critical eye.
Assessment, I got it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, or our tendency with the word assessment, and I would love to think of another one, but is to think of it, I don't like the word evaluation because that has real negative connotations. That,
yeah.
So I use assessment because it has a little broader sense of being able to say this is good. And for me, assessment is more, what do we feel like worked, what would we like to do again? And
reflection.
Yeah, reflection might be better.
Yeah, no judgment, just,
yeah.
You know, when I heard it, when you hear this story through this different set of ideas or bodies, Kathy, one of the things that popped up for me when I heard it is good is, okay, let it be.
Yeah.
That kind of ties in with your first comment, it's just, that's the essence.
That is, yeah.
Well, and the other thing that is that out of darkness there was light, out of the void there became something. So it's very much as most creation stories from most cultures is about making distinctions, about distinguishing something, that light and dark are different, that land and water are different, and that when we bring something forth, we are distinguishing, we are making it different from the, we're making it known. Taking it out of the void and making it known. The void is the unknown. It's the formless. There is nothing. There's no distinctions there. It is not. But when we create, we bring it forth and we distinguish it from what is not.
Wow.
Which is actually very Taoist. But I think it's really, very
yeah,
it's
yeah,
very
yeah.
Taoist. But it's very much in that story too.
Oh, it's absolutely.
Which is also very much in the scientific explanation of creation, too.
God, we should have run that by me about 10 times. That's too good. Mm-hmm. I've heard several people use the word tension in different, you know.
Intention?
Yeah, tension. Like mm-hmm. You know, Kathy, that, and I've never heard that word used before in this kind of a way as far as the, I mean, I'll apply it. They were talking like the tension of balance, you know, and holding the balance.
Mm-hmm.
But also within the creative process, mm-hmm. you're talking void, you know, you're talking something coming out of nothing, you're talking form out of the formless, mm-hmm. Darkness into light. I'm seeing that retention every idea of anything more to say.
I think that the whole creative process and the life process,
yes,
and the death process as part of the life process is a very paradoxical. So it is often about holding things that are opposing to each other. And our tendency in the Western, dominant Western culture is to be fairly linear and to move from one to the next. And to not have the capacity to hold both. So it's a more of a both. I think the creative process, though, does require us and does ask us to hold both.
Mm-hmm.
And to not get into an either or a linear, so much of a linear.
And apply some tension, some,
yeah, and
some
so there's
balance,
tension. So if you're going to hold, and if you're only going to hold one, there's not tension.
Right.
If you move from one just to the,
right.
But if you are holding both, there's tension between them. And I think there we do, we just don't know it, we don't acknowledge it as much. And it's the whole idea, notion of yin and yang in Eastern philosophy. And it's a truth that I believe exists, it's just how do we orient ourselves
to light
it.
Light and darkness, you
yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Waters the land. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'm sorry.
You know, and for me it's also very linked to this is making a big jump here, but for me it's very linked to global survival in that we can move towards that kind of an understanding where multiple perspectives, multiple points of view, multiple ways of being, multiple thoughts can exist together where there's not an either or and there's not one right way, but there are multiple ways and being able to hold those. And we are already all confronted by that because of the cultures that we interact with have conflicting
mm-hmm.
values
mm-hmm.
and different ways of looking at
and cultures and generations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to hold
culture and religions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I liked what you last night, I can't remember if you or who was
Anthony.
Anthony, yeah. Drew the thing on the board. But
that normally is the straight line and it's either here or here, but instead to make it a circle where there's any number of points.
That'd be, yeah. And it's amazing how even the way we structure things when we work with people, in a classroom setting, a traditional classroom setting, the people are sitting there and there's one teacher here. And that dynamic encourages a thought of there's one right way, and it's the person that's sitting at the front, you know, and everybody else is. Whereas what we were trying to do last night, and I know all of you weren't there, I don't think you were all there, but was to encourage the different points of view, because, and trying not to line it up, you know.
Right, absolutely.
That sort of fashion. And I actually think that is used a lot in negotiation. You know, I use it a lot in conflict resolution, where I try to find a round table, you know, not to have people sitting on sides, you know, and opposing each other.
There's a quote that I love, Dante, you know, from the Baron Company, Meditations with Dante anyway. Hmm. Love said to me, I am like the center of the circle to which are related all parts of its circumference.
Hmm.
And to me that's everything, all of creation. Mm-hmm. This and God is close as
it's kind of like Mark's medicine, you know.
Yes.
That's based on the person.
That would make a great math, you know that? Just speak that and ask everybody to be quiet for a few minutes. Let it percolate.
Actually, I'd like to write that down, or if you could write it down.
Yeah, that's a lovely one.
Yeah, it'd be great.
I mean, now or later.
Go ahead.
Beth, you were talking about the abundance of creation in the arena of religions and ideas. I don't know that this can be shown to be true, but in the natural creation, it is known to be true. But when you eliminate diversity, you are inviting disaster.
Yeah.
What does allow things to evolve and adapt is when there's diversity. So if there's fire or something, there was enough different kinds of things that those that can adapt will.
Yeah.
But once you get down to a single species of anything, it's ready to be nipped off and it's done.
Right.
And
so homogeneity is the death. If it gets too homogenous. Mm-hmm.
How do you spell circumference? F-E-R or
F-R? F-E-R.
What I'd like to do before we end is actually see if you all want to participate in this. What I'd wanted to do is for each of us to write a haiku poem about our word. And haiku, you know, has five. So five syllables, seven syllables, five. And when I do this, I generally don't hold people to that, since we're not writing in Japanese to begin with. But try to roughly, you know, so if it's eight on the second one, that's fine. So don't, you know, not use a word because it's got one too many here. One.
So five syllables or five words?
Five syllables. Five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. And often haiku poetry, other than having that pattern, is related to nature. There's a nature theme in it. If you would like to, and if your word moves you that way, using nature imagery is one way to be consistent with the tradition of haiku. So just take in, haiku is nice because it can be fast.
You say it's five syllables, not five words? Yeah.
Yeah, you bet. I've got some
of the pens is quite
warm. Okay, you can use my chewed off one there.
It's warm and living. Slimy,
man. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's yours.
Thank you for that.
Wow.
So I'll make a copy, and then if I'll see if I can find you at lunch.
Oh, cool. You know, one of the things that just doing this also, besides creating something that struck me, is that the process of creation is frequently grows out of, for me, a challenge.
Mm.
You know, when you create
So I was going to end with a poem by Mary Oliver. And, oh, before I end with the poem, I have to end with an advertisement. John in the bookstore would like this. There, Mary Oliver's poems are now in the bookstore if you'd like to purchase, as well as a book that I find have found one of the most helpful in terms of really moving into the creative process and recommend to people. It's called The Artist Way in the bookstore. The title of the poem might sound a little daunting, but it's by Mary Oliver, is When Death Comes. But as I was talking before, I think when we talk about one end of the paradox, we're also very much talking about the other. And for her, to speak about death, and for me, is to really speak about life. Mm-hmm. Certainly that's consistent with our faith. So, when death comes like the hungry bear in autumn, when death comes and takes all the bright coins from his purse to buy me, and snatches the purse shut. When death comes like the measles pox, when death comes like an iceberg between the shoulder blades, I want to step through the door full of curiosity, wondering, what is it going to be like, that cottage of darkness? And therefore I look upon everything as a brotherhood and a sisterhood, and I look upon time as no more than an idea. And I consider eternity as another possibility. And I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy, and as singular. And each name a comfortable music in the mouth, tending, as all music does, towards silence. And each body a lion of courage, and something precious to the earth. When it's over, I want to say, all my life, I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world.